Okay, everybody, welcome. It's week three, believe it or not, in the Niching for Hippies course. And there have been so much activity on this group in the last couple hours. It's been really wonderful seeing you throw up your comments and throw up your big circles. So super excellent to have you here. Ryan Wiley seems to be having trouble getting on. That's on the group wall. If anyone can help while I'm talking, that would be great. Where to start? So let's recap what we've done. So in week one, we were really just talking about the seed. We were just stirring things up and looking at our own life experience and what that might have sort of prepared us for in terms of a niche. Last week, we delved a bit deeper into that. And also, we've been starting to put some kind of container around it. I'm talking about this idea of the big circle, the sort of general sense of who we want to work with, including the type of person, the qualities that we would want, the general sense of what they're struggling with. And that big circle is kind of like the flower pot. It's the container that has the soil that everything else is going to grow in, or it's like one of those gels that you put over a light and then the light changes color and it kind of filters everything. So we've talked about this, and this week we're going to start diving into the idea of the little circles. And the little circles are where things really start to pop. So we've been laying a lot of the groundwork. This call is going to be very practical, a ton of examples. I think you're going to like it. But before we get started, I would actually love for you to share on the group wall, what did you learn from writing the big circle, but also reading other people's big circles? I know there were a number of things that kind of showed up for me and became pretty clear. But I'm curious for you, what did you learn about niching, about this idea of the big circles, from writing and reading everybody else's big circle? So let's take a couple of minutes and write on the wall. Let's just take one more minute. Feel free to add your 2 cents there. What did you learn? Okay, everybody. So let's see what we got. Okay, so big lessons that's come from the big circle so far. So Lorraine said, niching isn't separate from the why's journey and the point of view. That is 100% true. I think sometimes people look at niching as this thing of like, let me just pick who I want to reach at this target market. But of course, those people are going to want to resonate with your why and your point of view. They're going to be people who you are credible in helping, which is going to connect your journey and their journey. So yeah, niching is connected to all of this. Bob said it's easier to go big circle to start. Generally, I find it is. Sometimes people start with a really clear small circle, but I find that if we don't talk about the big circle stuff, and sometimes this can seem slow and kind of frustrating, but if we don't talk about the big circle piece, then I find that it just doesn't seem to work as well, or people get frustrated. And most of us, I think the important thing is to start where we are clear. And the big circle is the place to start. I remember going to a marketing workshop, and they're talking about niching. And the guy who was facilitating, this woman shared a target market. He said, "This is the one I want to work on." And he sort of slammed her and said, "No, that's not good enough. It's not specific." And I could just see her traumatized by that. And like she wasn't going to speak up the rest of the workshop, and she felt like a failure around niching. But it struck me that everything she'd said that he said was too vague and too general was actually perfect for the big circle. So I think it's really important for us to give ourselves a place to put these things. Not everything is going to be a good small circle, but it might be a good big circle. Okay, so Martha said it's okay to look for a target very specific niches, even in terms of a client's level of awareness of certain things. That's true, and it's interesting. I want to sort of flag that because I think that can be a complicated thing. I don't know if we're necessarily always wanting to target the level of awareness, but to realize that around any particular journey, around any particular issue that people are struggling with, people will be at different levels of awareness. And it's important to have strategies to meet people at different levels. Because we talked on the other call about the 3%, 7%, 30%, all of that. You've got 3% that are like, "I'm ready, I'm looking for it, I will buy one if they offer it to me." 7%, they're open to it, they're exploring. 30% are aware for the future. 30% are clueless, 30% are like a no. So people are at those different levels of awareness. And most marketing just goes for that 3%. So I would say if your target market was people who are clueless, that's a really hard target market. So I wouldn't necessarily target by level of awareness, but I would be aware that, but I would be aware that, people with any particular issue will be at different levels of awareness. I just want to pause. Somebody just is saying they can't get in. Beg your pardon? Oh, sorry, yeah. Sorry, yeah, that free conference dial-in thing for Skype, it was not working for me either. So I'll see if I can look into that for next week call, but apologies. Yes. Okay, so Julia. Sure is. Yes, Julia is saying it could easily help someone else with this, as I understand. I appreciate the concepts, but it's not working for me yet. Keep breathing, keep breathing. It's always easier to help other people. That's great. Larry was saying, "I realize I'm getting a lot clearer about my niche and a lot closer to making it happen. I feel more confident about where I'm headed." This is really important. Sometimes people, I'll talk to them, they say, "I just don't feel very confident in my business. And so it's a self-esteem thing. So I need to go to a workshop and do a bunch of healing to feel more confident." Sometimes that's true, but sometimes it's honestly just that things actually aren't that clear. And of course, you don't feel that confident because there's not a lot to feel confident about. Yeah. Lonnie said, "I had a decent idea of who my folk were, but keep thinking my whole business, not releasing into the idea of just a project." That's good. That's good. That's actually the whole point of the big circle is to think in general for your whole business. So that's perfect. You're in exactly the right place. Yeah, Colleen said, "What I've learned is being much more specific about who I want to reach, even in my big circle. Yeah, because the big circle, even though it's general, even though it's anyone we want to work with, it's still that flower pot. There's still walls to it. There's still a container. Yes, Margit said, the more specific, the more powerful it is. Also, when characteristics are linked with the suffering, when both island A and B are clear in the paragraph of the big circle, yes, that is, it makes it so much better. Yes. We're going to be talking a lot about that during this call. Details are powerful. And again, in the big circle inherently, it often ends up not being that specific. Sometimes over time, it really does refine. But especially as we get into the little circle, that's where the details become extremely compelling. Let's see what else. That many of our circles, Carolyn said, that many of our circles overlap and that it was easier to focus on other circles than to knuckle down to my own. Sure. Yeah, and given that a lot of people here in holistic work and that, there's bound to be some overlap, but which is great because, and I know some of you have been doing this, reading people's things and noticing, like, oh, that's a great phrase, and maybe I could use that for my own. Wonderful. You know, if that can help you clarify your own thing, that's great. See what else? Anything else? Okay, Tamar said, I was surprised how much the big circle is about psychographics in many cases. Yes, that's what we're going to go into in this call. This idea of the inner realities, the values, the worldview, often ends up really defining things more. Okay. Also, so Martha said, I also started wondering how we go about go from establishing the niches to finding the best ways to communicate with that curve. Something we're going to go to not so much in this call, but in future calls. And this starts to happen as the niche gets clearer. We start wondering about the practicalities. When it's vague, it's really hard to move to any practicalities. So yes. Interesting. Lorraine said a really important thing here. So big circles look different written from the client's symptoms versus our diagnosis, right? Because we may say, my clients are people who really need to be more grounded. But I'll guarantee you that's not how they experience it. That's not how they articulate it. They may just feel nervous all the time, or they might feel like they're wanting other people's approval, or they might. So we want to always be looking at these things. Or at least additionally, be looking at these things, not just from our diagnosis of what our take is, but what their symptoms are. So those are great. Awesome work, everybody. Those are really clear, powerful lessons to take from it. Okay. Here are some additional things I want to toss out that I noticed from reading all your big circles. So first of all, it can be very hard to find hubs from the big circle. And some people are like, well, I don't know where these people would hang out. You're probably not supposed to get it quite yet because the big circle inherently is so broad that it's hard to find hubs. That's fine. That's actually not the role of the big circle. Sometimes it will help you find hubs, but it's harder to find hubs from the big circle. When we get to the little circles, it's so much easier to find hubs. But it's good to notice that because sometimes people will do like what you wrote out for a big circle and they'll be like, well, that's my target market, right? That's my niche. And then they struggle with their market and they don't realize why they're struggling. But the reason is because it's a big circle and it's broad. And if they were to just come up with a smaller circle within that, everything would move a lot faster. And remember that for the big circle is mostly for us as a filter. This isn't something we put out a ton in marketing materials. You won't build a project around it. So this is largely an internal thing. It's a filter to make sure that we're attracting the right people to us. And we just want to, it comes in some places in marketing, in a general sense, but the most compelling things will be the small circles. And the big circle we'll keep refining over time. So the little circles, but the big circle, you know, every single client you see can give you more information about the big circle to help you refine it, what you want, et cetera. Yeah, just keep paying attention to as you work with people, as you talk with people, which people draw you in and fill you up with energy and which ones are draining you. Here's another thing to notice. Notice if there are any of these qualities of clients. When you think of like, oh, I really don't want this kind of client. If there are any that really kind of tweak you emotionally, that really like bug you, annoy you, frustrate you, you feel a lot of judgment coming up. Because it's real different to say, you know, it really brings out my best when clients are like this, or I really love it when my clients are like this, or to say, you know, it's not really a fit if my clients are this way, versus they should absolutely never and have a sort of judgmental, critical tone of people. Because if it triggers you in that way, there's probably something internal for you to look at of why there's such a resistance in yourself and a judgment in yourself to those kinds of qualities. Another thought, the big circles shouldn't ever go against human nature. There were a few phrases I saw in some of the big circles of like suggesting, well, these clients would never get defensive, they never resist growth. And the challenge is people are defensive sometimes, and people do resist growth often. So we want to be careful that our phrasing of the big circle isn't something that we're trying to find an impossible person. You know, it's like this person will never get defensive no matter how much I critique them, and no matter which way I critique them. That may not be possible. So we want to just be, I think, mindful of that. The framing as, you know, I think it really brings out my best when I'm working with people who versus people have to be this way. Another phrase was, and it was that people who don't question that I have their best interests at heart. People may question that. Yes, and ultimately you're going to want to work with those. People. And it's hard to know people who would get very defensive if somebody ever questioned their intentions, where that could actually be the moment where things shift and they do trust them because of the way they responded to the lack of trust. You know, if somebody says, I don't think you have my best interest in heart, that could be a moment to turn things around and to show them you really do versus to say, oh, you're not necessarily a client. So we want to be mindful of which of these qualities are reasonable, unreasonable, and which of these are coming from a sort of wounded place in ourself, and which ones aren't. So just some thoughts there. Here's a big piece, and this just really came to me in the last couple of days reading this. Whatever you wrote down for your big circle, this, and in terms of the qualities that you really want, you know, that they're punctual, they're on time, they're open-minded. They don't resist growth. They're not defensive. They're open to change. They're ready to do the work. All of those types of things. Whatever you wrote down for your client, you need to be that to attract them. You need to embody that really strongly to attract those kinds of people. And sometimes what I find is people in their big circle. And that's interesting as I reflect back too of people I've worked with. When they articulate it, it's like they're articulating a perfect person. A person who's like no flaws, who then I just wonder why they would even want to work with them. But what sometimes it is it's an expression of that they are actually incredibly harsh with themselves and they have this perfectionistic attitude in themselves and they project that on their clients. But just whatever it is that you are wanting a client, you're going to have to be that. And so if that's an unrealistic thing for your client, that's probably a way you might be being unrealistic or really hard on yourself. So I don't know if that lands or makes sense, but it's something that came up and I just invite you to sit with it. Also to know that you can help educate your clients to become dream clients. You know, and this is why the sales funnel can be so important to have levels of things, you know, before they work with you one-on-one, maybe there are workshops or talks they can go to or videos they can check out. There may be ways to actually educate people about what kind of clients you want to work with, so that by the time they actually come to you and work with you, and in the process of working with you, there's a way of building that relationship and educating them so that they know really explicitly what being a dream client for you looks like. Because sometimes people are like, they'll say, I never want people to be late for sessions, but they never have any real system or conversation to make sure that people know that being on time for sessions really matters, or that canceling isn't okay. So they just kind of get bitter and they like get, resentful and just fire their clients and say, well, I don't want to work with you, or they just secretly resent it and continue to work with them. And instead of that, we just want to make sure that we have a system and a way of working with them, some rituals, some routines, in working with clients that help educate them to become the best kind of clients. Because don't assume that when clients walk in, they're going to totally get that. They may not understand how to be a good client, and we may have to educate them. And sometimes there can be a sort of a training process where we, there's a great book, The 1 Minute Manager. And sometimes you just have to have a really clear agreement with them and reward them when they do it well and really appreciate them and acknowledge them for that. So that's it's a thought. Also, something, just a small thing to red flag. Notice if you're wanting, sometimes I've come across practitioners who just want clients who are obedient, who will do whatever they say to feed their ego. And they actually, I've seen people who are like, well, clearly the problem is not on my side. I'm an amazing healer. And if fear is coming up or shame is coming up, that's getting in the way of the healing process. And that's getting in the way of the work. And so that's their fault. And my belief is, as a service provider, of course, those things are going to come up for people. And it's actually our role to help them through those. So sometimes people just want clients that are just going to do what they say, and they can do their thing and not have to deal with the reality of another human being. So something to think about. So those are some thoughts and reflections that came up for me in reading it. So thank you all for being so vulnerable and putting out your big circles. So now we're going to start talking about the little circles. Now, everything I'm about to say for little circle really could fit for the big circle, because sometimes there are circles within circles within circles. Your big circle, you might have three smaller circles. And within each of those circles, you might have three smaller circles. And within each of those, you could keep drilling down. So this is really just about circles, but we're going to start talking about the, in your case, three little circles within the circle that you have. Yeah. So there are three elements that are critical to have in a really solid small circle: demographics, psychographics, and the journey. So again, demographics, psychographics, and the journey. So the demographics, are the outer things. Again, we talked about this in the intro call, but there's age, gender, ethnic background, their income level, parental status, marital status, what they do for work, their profession, the industry there. And those are all the demographics. That's an important part because it can help, shape a bit. And for some of you, those really came in. There was an age range, or there was a ethnic group, or there was a gender that you were focused on. So the demographics matter, but the challenge is, again, most people just think only demographics. So the psychographics also matter. And the psychographics, and by the way, I'm going to give a cursory overview here, and I'm going to give you in the homework a ton of really specific questions to dive into each of these to help you refine it for your little circles. So the psychographics are the internal things. They're the values, the worldview, the communities that they're a part of, their aesthetic, their vibe, how they, see the world, their philosophy, the internal things that they share as a community of people. Demographics can create communities like the retiring community and empty nesters, people who work in a certain industry. Those are demographics, and there are communities that form around that. But what I want to suggest is that the strongest communities tend to form around the psychographics. Demographics can often happen to us. Psychographics are a bit more of a choice, and they're more deeply felt. They're more internal. Just because somebody is black doesn't mean they believe certain things. Just because you're a man doesn't mean you see the world a certain way. So the internal things, that's where it's at. with like your graphics. And you'll notice that a lot of what you came up with in your big circles had to do with that, the psychographics, much more so than the demographics. The third part is the journey, and we're talking about the journey from island A to island B. So just a mini recap. You've got this person, this client, they're on island A, they're really sad and frustrated and in pain because they've got this problem. They want to be on island B where they have some result, yeah? And they want to make that journey from island A to island B. Your business is kind of the boat that can take them on that journey. The more specific that journey is, the better. So when we talk about the journey and wanting to have that in the little circle, consider the difference between these three journeys. One person says, yeah, I help people with problems get the results they're after. That's like the most generic. That's to everybody on the planet. I don't even know what it means. It's so general. Then you could say, well, I help people on the journey from like bad health to good health. I help people on the journey from what else? Like I'm broke to I have money to bad relationships to good relationships to stress to deeply at peace. That journey is a lot more specific. If you weave on, now you might even get more specific within each of those about the type of journey. But when we weave them all together, we get a lot more clarity about the circle. So for example, to say I work with parents in Calgary who are, let's say, between like 25 and 40 years old. So that's the demographics. Who are really into green conscious living, alternative schooling. They're really passionate about good communication. They're into spiritual work, but they're not that woo-woo. They're not into like crystals and everything, but they're into more like nonviolent communication, Vipassana meditation, whatever. Let's say that's the psychographic. So I'm painting a picture of the type of person they are. And the journey they are is that they really struggle with parenting in terms of like being too authoritarian or too permissive. And they struggle with how to do that. And so that's island A is like, yeah, what do I do? Island B is that they are strong, centered, loving, and kind with their child, even when their kid is testing them the most. So that's the journey. So I hope you get that by combining all three of them, we just get a much more dimensionalized sense of who that person is. And what's interesting is once you get a really clear small circle like this, what starts to happen is people just are like, oh, you should talk to this person, or have you met this person? My cousin needs you. You get all that kind of stuff, and you'll have ideas of products and projects that you can do with these people when it's really refined like this. So let's just pause and see if there are just any questions about that, because that was a little bit of technical stuff. I hope it's pretty clear. So, but let's just pause to see if there are any specific questions around those three demographics, psychographics, and the journey. And you will be getting a ton of like materials after this to review and refine. But if you're super confused right now, speak up. Okay. I love it. Debbie said, I think the process might be like sculpting, chipping away at what I don't want as a client, what remains as the ideal client. Yeah, totally. Is there a better island A, the need or the problem? Does one drive them more into the journey? The need, well, this is funny. This is where It depends how we're defining need. The important thing is Island A is about the symptoms that they are aware of themselves. And sometimes when we say need, what we're basically saying is this is what I think they need. But that's useful. That's our point of view. But what drives them into wanting to work with us, what makes us relevant are their symptoms, what they experience. So not our sense that they need to be more open, that they need to be more accepting, but is their own pain, their own experience, as they would word it, as they would articulate it, which is why having conversations with these people is really important. So we can hear how they talk about it and articulate it. Cool. The example that weaves all three together is helpful. That's great. Okay, so let's keep going. So I put up a new file. So if you go to the top where it says Niching for Hippies, 6-week courses about events, photos, and files in the Facebook group, you'll see this file, Niching Case Studies. You can use this or not. The links are there so you can check them out later. But I wanted to give you a bunch of examples of niche businesses to encourage you, inspire you, and you can check these out later. A lot of these are on my blog, so you can actually, I did a bit of an interview with them about how it's working for them that I think should work, should hopefully help you and inspire you. So here are a few of them. So first of all, there's Alex Baisley with the Big Dream Program, who I've probably talked about before, adore his stuff. So he was this commercial diver for years and had a lifestyle he didn't like. And now he's become this lifestyle coach, and he helps people figure out how to, instead of one day making enough money to retire to have the quality of life they want, how do you start with the kind of lifestyle you want now and then back your business and your projects into that? Really brilliant stuff. So that's his niche. That's a particular journey he helps people on. The Uncaged Life, similar. Rebecca Tracy, a friend of mine from Toronto, she does life coaching around helping people kind of get uncaged, people who are living a life that they don't want to live. She's kind of more of an outrageous, bold version of Alex Baisley. You know, she just decided to move into a van and live in a van and travel around and build her business on her laptop as she travels around the world or North America or doing rock climbing. And she really wants to help people sort of bust out of their comfort zone and live the kind of life they've always wanted to live. Nancy Jutton is this amazing PR person in Seattle, really brilliant, wonderful woman. And she, when she first started, this is an interesting thing of like how niches can change and become more authentic over time. But when she started, she thought, well, of course, if these people who want to be seen in the spotlight, want to be huge, big personalities, that's who she thought she wanted to work with as a PR person. But she realized that she's a very introverted person, but I think she's just had to adapt in her life to get by. And so she's realized that a lot of her clients that she loves working with most are the introverted ones who still need to get exposure, but they're kind of introverted and shy, and they need some help in terms of getting exposure. And that's what's most satisfying for her in terms of a niche. HolisticMBA.com. If you check it out, that's a website for holistic practitioners. It's like an MBA program, brilliant work. So notice they're not just saying like, hey, conscious marketing for everybody. They've picked this niche of holistic practitioners specifically. Brilliant. The Happy MD. A colleague of mine, Dyke Drummond, who I met in California. And when I met him, actually a few years ago, he had a different niche. He was working with helping men around a midlife crisis piece. And he had this workshop called, and talk about a great niche project. It's called the 3-Hour Midlife Crisis. And he would, in this 3 hours, help men sort of like really get clear about what do they want and help them transition through this midlife crisis, and did coaching around that. Because he'd gone through that himself. But what is more interesting is I reached out to him because I was like, hey, I want to kind of feature you for this niching thing. He said, well, you know, my niche actually changed. And I said, well, how? And he said, well, you know, for years I was a doctor. I was an MD, and I got totally burned out, which is what started me looking at life coaching and holistic stuff and the midlife crisis thing. And he said, but I realized, like, those are the people I really want to work with. And he said, said, if I'd known me now, if I'd been able to get my help as I am today, 10 years ago, I'd still be a doctor. So he created a website, the Happy MD, and he works with doctors, helping them deal with the burnout and stay balanced and, sustainable in their practice. Brilliant. At the same workshop, I met Daigai, I met this other woman, and she stood up during one of the niche exercises, and she said, and she was an Asian woman, and she said, I grew up with a very critical mom, and her experience was a lot of moms in the Asian community had a sort of critical thing, and she was like, I want to do a workshop for Asian women who've grown up in really critical households, and she said, I want to call it Release Your Dragon Spirit. And so she got all these Asian women who were also life coaches and stuff to speak on it. And she said it was just the most wonderful, fulfilling experience. She organized a telesummit, basically called Release Your Dragon Spirit, and got some really nice attention to it. It wasn't a huge, huge thing, but it was a start, and it was, you could tell it was so meaningful and fulfilling for her. And here's the interesting thing, too, about being explicit versus exclusive. I mean, do you think there might be other moms from other ethnic groups that might also be critical of their children? Maybe. So it's like, it's one of those things where I know that there would be women attending that who weren't Asian, who black women, gosh, Native American, white, whatever, Hispanic calling in because the core journey still resonates with them. Now, this is a funny thing. If the journey is really the hot spot of this. So when we look at those three, the demographics, psychographics, and journey, the journey is the center of it. The next circle out to me are the psychographics, and then just refining the details are the demographics. But I think the demographics are actually the least important part, because if the journey is really clear, you'll have people who don't fit the demographics or psychographics still coming in. Like there's a woman who I'll talk about in a second, who's a mortgage broker, and she doesn't do any kind of green holistic anything, and she's sort of a hippie, but not like totally. She's becoming more hippie, but she would come to my workshops, and I remember at one point we were talking about this, and she said to the group, like, yeah, I'm here because I just resonate with what Tad talks about, and because it's relevant to my journey, even though she doesn't necessarily fit within like kind of life coaches, permaculture practitioners, holistic practitioners. So it's interesting. The Institute for Part-Time Entrepreneurs. There's this woman, she realized that most of the business networking groups and support groups out there were for full-time entrepreneurs and made a lot of assumptions about their members that they were full-time, and the strategies that they suggested were only really relevant for people who could do it full-time. So she wanted to create a network for part-time entrepreneurs, people who had a lot, less free time, and would honor and acknowledge that and have their prices based on that. And I thought that was brilliant. Chris Ward with AbundantYogi.com. She was a yoga teacher and was just sick of seeing her friends be broke and having this sort of like nobility of like, well, I'm broke, but that's just, the dharma or whatever. And they couldn't sustain themselves. And so she was like, had the provocative notion that you can be a yogi, but also abundant. And it's interesting because it's actually broadened a bit. It started with yoga, but of course it's broadened to sort of holistic practitioners in general. Yoga for Caregivers, to talk about in the intro call. The Cool Vegetarian blog, my friend Jeff in Winnipeg, he had all these different interests and passions, but he came up with this cool niche project, which has actually grown pretty big. And he's a raw vegan guy, and he's just like, man, like, I just feel like all the science is there, and I don't want to talk about that. If I were to write a book, I don't want to talk about recipes because there's so many recipe books, so I don't know what to do. And I was just like, dude, you travel around the world, you meet with celebrities all the time, you like hang out with Woody Harrelson, you just have the coolest lifestyle. And I feel like that's a piece that's missing that you could really talk about. How do you have a cool lifestyle as a vegetarian? How do you not be an asshole about things? What do you do at Thanksgiving and all this? And it's like, you travel around, you could be interviewing people, like doing video blogging and video interviews of folks and put that on your blog. And so I was like, and I'd call it like the Cool Vegetarian or something. I sort of tossed it out, and he's like, I love it. And he ran with it. So he's got this blog, The Cool Vegetarian, super awesome. And he's just gotten so many hits, and he's been building out this platform. And I don't know how much he's monetized it at this point, but sometimes a niche project isn't. Some of them are monetizable, some of them aren't. Some of them just kind of build you a platform and following that you can monetize later. So I think that's kind of more the approach he's gone. There's another woman who I met in Toronto. She's this jewelry marketing genius, and it's interesting because jewelry, it's a product, yeah. So like, how the hell do you niche it? But she created her jewelry with target markets in mind, and there are specifically three lines of sort of three collections of jewelry she has. One of them is the House of Rock, which is a unisex line that's geared towards men and women that are looking for slightly edgier pieces that are inspired by rock music, urban culture, and individuality. Then there's the Duchess collection, which is the more girly and frivolous and inspired by childhood keepsakes, antiquities, etc. And the last one is the Believe line, which is based on world religion, spirituality, and what inspires people. So notice that each of those three types of jewelry all have a different target market kind of in mind. Yoga for round bodies, we talked about. I've heard about hair salons that are like eco-friendly hair salons or child-friendly, where they actually have childcare built in. So, which is so beautiful. Like, so a mom who is like haggard and just like run off, her feet with her kid, and wants to go to a salon and get treated, can go because they have childcare and she can go treat herself. Amazing. Carrie Klassen with PinkElephantCommunications.com is one of the most brilliant, lovely people I know. She's the Audrey Hepburn of marketing in my mind. It's a niche project. She created a product called the Lovable Homepage Workshop. So she does marketing work in general, but she created a product for people on how to write their homepage, which I can't recommend highly enough for you writing your homepage, because it'll help you take everything we're working on and turn it into a homepage that really grabs people. So, but that kind of a product can be an example of a niche project. What else? Marketing for artists. Marketing for hippies, marketing for artists. So this woman created a whole website and coaching program based on helping artists. So crafters, artisans, painters, photographers, helping them figure out how to market their stuff. Wonderful. Very specific target market. This mortgage broker who came to my workshop, she really wanted to focus on young women who were like in that process of moving out, like they're at home, they're partying, they're having fun, and being at home just is not working for them anymore, and they don't have the freedom, and they just want to move out, but they can't afford it, etc. And the oh, sorry, I want to say, oh, the therapy vault. I don't think I talked about this one, where this woman, she was a therapist, and she noticed as a therapist, you hear so many secrets from people. And she didn't have anyone to talk to about that. So she created this, and she thought, if I'm going through this idea that those things which are most personal or most general, if I'm going through this, I bet you there are other people and other therapists who are struggling with having all these secrets that can't tell anyone. And so she created this website where therapists could go and anonymously, in a very safe way, share the secrets that they've been hearing, in a way that can, never be traced back geographically or connected to them. Brilliant. What a niche project. Escape from Cubicle Nation. Pam Slim worked as a corporate drone for years, and finally was like, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of selling my soul in this corporate structure. I want out. And she created this blog called Escape from Cubicle Nation, which is a great title. She wrote this big manifesto about it. Genius. So, so let's pause there. That's a bunch of examples. And I would love to pause, first of all, just see if there are any questions at this point, but also if anyone has any examples that they would like to share that you think would be inspiring to other people. So let's just pause for a couple of minutes and I'll look on the wall. Any questions, resources? Okay. So Julia was asking about me coaching somebody through the process, but I think we may do that next call because we want to focus right now on the little circles. And so I want to go through an 11-point checklist when you're thinking about little circles. And I'm going to have you all share one on the wall, and we'll do some kind of conversations and coaching based on what you put up. There, which will give us some useful things. So here are the, and again, you're going to get this in a document too. But here's an 11-point checklist. Meaning, sometimes people, they'll come up with a big circle, and they'll say, "Okay, that's great. Here's my little circle." And they'll come up with something, and it will have the demographics, psychographics, and a journey, and yet it doesn't work. So the having the three criteria is kind of the beginning, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee it's actually going to happen. So let me go through what I think, and this is seven of these I got from Bill Barron, and some of them are actually things I already talked about too, but here are the things that I think are most important. So think about this as you're starting to think about the little circles. You might want to pick one of them to think through. And if you've already imagine you've been giving some thought to what the little circles might be, what one particular subset of your big circle might be. So I want you to, well, this is actually take a minute. Don't write it on the wall because we're going to do that in a second. But I want you to take a minute and I want you to reflect on what might one of those little circles be. What might one of them be? Take 1 minute, maybe just jot it down, clarify it a bit. But pick one little circle. And then as I go through these 11 points, I want you to filter what you just wrote down with that little circle through that. Yeah. And if it's tricky, just do the best you can. Pick something to fiddle with, and we'll go from there. Okay, so here are the 11 things. Whatever you've got, think about it through this. The first one, first most important criteria is just, is it clear? There's the old adage in marketing that the confused mind says no. And a lot of times when people say their target market, usually they're talking kind of big circle stuff. And so it ends up being kind of unclear and confusing. And when I say clear, what I mean is, when I say it, you should immediately know if you're in that group or not. You should immediately have a sense of you are that or you aren't. And you should also know immediately if you know somebody like that. Literally, a person's face should come to mind, or multiple faces. There should be a, that's me, I'm that person, or that's not me. So there shouldn't be any fuzziness about it. That's the most important thing. So when you think about the little circle, to think about if you said it to somebody, would they know immediately if that was them? Would they be able to identify somebody else? Number two, there need to be enough of them who can sustain you. Now, again, they're one small circle. It may not be your whole business, but it's got to be, there has to be enough of them to be able to, and who can afford to pay you your full price to make it worthwhile. And that seems obvious, but it is really worth thinking about because sometimes people will niche so narrow in a small circle that there just aren't enough of them to make it worthwhile. Or there's like, yeah, there's 100 of them, but it's not like they're all going to buy. So you just want to think about this and notice it and do a little research, do a little poking around. Yeah. And when I say enough who can afford to pay you the full price, that's important because sometimes people say, well, all my target markets can't afford to pay me. That's wonderful. And what you have there is a nonprofit. Then you need to do fundraising. It's a different model. It's wonderful. God bless nonprofits. But you still need to sustain yourself. You still have to pay rent. You got to eat food. So then the model just becomes you have to do fundraising and get money from other people because the people who you're going to be working with can't afford to pay you. So if you have a nonprofit model, that's fine. But otherwise, if you're doing it as a business, you need to have enough people who can afford to pay you full price. And sometimes people, of course, have models where some people pay more so they can donate their services to others. That's fine. But whatever that total combination is, you've still got to get your needs met too. That's important. Number three, are there particular places where they congregate and hang out in person, online? Basically, are there hubs? And man, you can go through those first two and be like, yeah, it's clear, yeah, there are enough, but there are no hubs, and that can kill it. I'm putting these, by the way, in my mind, in sequential order. So it's like, as you go through each of these are different levels and filters. And if at any point you get stopped, I mean, if you don't make it to probably six or seven here, it's probably not that strong a niche. So if there are no places to hang out, if you can't find them, if they don't have established high-quality hubs and communication networks, whether that is a website, magazines, etc., that's probably going to kill it right there. Because then you have to reach them cold, and that's very difficult. So that's number three. Number four, can you honestly say you care for, respect, or even love your tribe? This is where the whole finding the wound and the niche connection becomes so important. This is where really pulling from our life experience can matter so much because there's inherently this empathic connection. But sometimes if somebody just randomly picks a cynical target market, I think you're just going to lose steam. You're going to lose your mojo. You're not going to be that inspired. Other people who are much more passionate about that community will, of course, do better because they're just going to work harder and people will feel that love and care from them much more. As my colleague Carrie Klassen says, life is both too short and too long to spend with people you don't love. So, yeah. Number five. This is critical, and this starts getting to the journey piece. Do you know what the result is that you know your tribe would be willing to pay for? Do you know what the result is that your tribe would be willing to pay for? In other words, what's Island B? What is it they're craving? What is the specific result they want? And here's the thought. That result, you can probably, if you can't say it in like three words, it's probably too complicated. The results that people want are like better sleep, better sex, better communication, to be able to meet girls, to be able to meet guys, to lose weight, gain muscle, etc. Results that people want are often very simple in terms of their experience. Now, we may have a whole diagnosis of what that's really about, and etc., but they want to feel at peace. They want to feel relaxed, comfortable in their skin. So, do you know what the result is that this small circle would be willing to pay for? It's got to be something that they want bad enough that they're willing to invest something. Now, of course, in this culture, it's all about money. But if you think about rites of passage of indigenous people from time immemorial, some of those rites of passage, they weren't simple. They weren't risk-free. They required a huge investment emotionally and physically. You think of Sundance, still the people do. And there's a result around being a man, being a woman, being an adult. It's something that people want enough to invest. They want a sense of spiritual cleanliness or connection to spirit that comes from doing those vision quests or the Sundance or those initiations. And they want it bad enough to be willing to invest something. So, of course, the investment could be time or money. We're in business, so we're talking about money. But if they're not willing to invest it, because there's some results people want, it's like, yeah, I wouldn't mind feeling more relaxed. But it's not like an urgent, I really want this. It's not a craving for them. So it's just hard to build a business around that. You could have a club around that. You could have like conversations about that, but may not be able to build much of a business. So do you actually know what the result is that they want, that they'd be willing to pay for? Number six, are you passionate about delivering that result? You know, my colleague and friend Bill Barron, who I got some of these ideas from, he really realized that the result that his clients were craving was they wanted more clients. And a lot of life coaches and practitioners, similar crowd to who I serve, and they really wanted more clients. And he is so passionate about helping his clients get more clients because he struggled. When he began as a life coach, he couldn't get new clients to save his life. And then he got really good at it, and he wanted to help other life coaches not to go through that struggle. So are you genuinely passionate about delivering that result and helping them get that? Number seven, this is where the rubber meets the road, too, in terms of niching. Do you want to be known for delivering that result? When we talk about marketing, you know, there's this whole conversation about branding, about your platform. What do you want to be known for? And a lot of people want to just be known for the boat. It's like, well, I have this kind of boat. I do yoga. I do life coaching. I do NLP. I do nonviolent communication. They talk about the boat a lot. That's nice. That's one thing to be known for. But one of the most important things to be known for is the result, Island B. Do you want to be known for delivering that result? You know, and there's a result for the big circle, and there are particular maybe results for the smaller circles. But let's just say you're at a party. You know, Bill was at a party, and somebody's like, hey, that's the guy who helps service-based professionals get more clients. He should be thrilled to hear that. And I was at a party, and somebody was like, oh, that's Tad. He helps hippies, you know, figure out ways to market, you know, that don't feel gross and don't cost a fortune. I'd be thrilled, you know. So do you want everyone to know that? If you don't, it's something to reconsider. Number eight, do you have the expertise or desire to commit to being an expert in delivering this result? That's another big one. Because, sure, you can help them with your own experience, but are you willing to also keep studying and keep learning and keep being a better expert? And I don't even know if expert is the right word, but are you willing to keep growing yourself so that you can help them get that result rather than just saying, well, here's what I did and it works for me? You know, do you love the idea of craftsmanship, of refining what you do, getting better at it, making an art out of it? Are you curious about the approaches that other people use and the tactics that can help get the same result, even if it's different than what you did, because it all helps get the same result? You know, maybe you use meditation to get out of depression, but maybe there are nutritional things that can help too, or exercise and all those. They don't just want you to be an expert in just sharing your story and your journey, but that's powerful. They want you to be an expert in the result. Number nine, can you identify other players who are creating successful businesses serving this market? This is really important. Sometimes people say, well, lots of other people are already doing that, so I won't. No, wrong. If there are other people doing it successfully, making money, that means there is enough of a demand. That means there's a market. It's a wonderful sign. So if you see other people doing it, now there still may be a sort of underserved market within that because there may be people responding to it, but maybe there are certain things that you could be bringing to the table that they're not bringing to the table. That would help a lot. And that would be unique and different. Number 10, they're aligned with your why, with your purpose. So, you know, there's a reason you do what you do. There's a bigger purpose. There's a passion that you have. And whatever that cause is, maybe the cause is optimism or women's health or social justice or men's issues or local food, whatever that is, ideally your target market, they're going to be so passionate about that cause as well. You know, there's a woman I knew who did breast massage, and she, when we really talked about it, what it was really about was women's empowerment for her. And that's so different. And her clients would be drawn to her because she was so passionate about that issue. If you're really passionate about an issue, your ideal clients, if they, you know, they're just going to be passionate about it. If you were talking about it and somebody else was like, yeah, no, that's not a big thing for me, it's going to be less of a fit. Number 11, they agree with or are intrigued by your point of view. They agree with or at least intrigued by your point of view. So, you know, in terms of this journey from Island A to Island B, you've got a take on it. You've got a particular perspective and a way of going about it you think makes the most sense. So in terms of diet, there's raw food, vegan, primal diet, macrobiotic, vegetarian, whole foods, local food, or organic. So many different perspectives for food groups. And your ideal client is going to be somebody who either already kind of agrees with your point of view and is like, yeah, that's how I see it too, or at least they're in a place where they're open to that point of view that you have. Because if you are, if you were a pagan healer, you would have a real hard time attracting fundamentalist Christians as clients. Even if, consider this, even if all those other 10 things were true. Even if all the other 10 were true, if you got to number 11 and they're just like, they walk into your office and you've got a horned god statue on the wall and you're asking for a blood offering, when they come in, it's not going to work. And vice versa. If you were a fundamentalist Christian healer, you were like a faith healer and they came in and they were pagan and you're like busting out the Bible, put your hand on the Bible, it burns, it burns. So it wouldn't work. There has to be some shared worldview here for there to be a fit. So those are 11 things. These are really useful to think about in advance because if you can get a small circle where you can check off all 11 of those, you are so set. Then it gets so easy to make this work. If you're missing a few of them, it gets harder, especially if you're missing the earlier ones. So that's the 11 sort of point checklist for your niches. Yes, by the way, you're going to be totally getting a copy of that in more detail than I even said to go through it and work through it. So I'm going to give you a sentence to fill out. I'm going to type it here. And what I want you to do is take 5 minutes. So we'll pause for 5 minutes and you can write it and put it on the wall. And then you'll all be getting some coaching and you can be coaching each other as we go through this for a small circle. So this isn't your like small circle you're committing to for the rest of the 6 weeks. You may change it after this, but I'm going to invite you to pick one small circle within your big circle. And what's important here is you don't need to name any of the big circle stuff really here. You don't need to say a bunch of that because we already know what your big circle is. That's already sort of clear. If there's something that's really important, you can put it in. But right now, we just want to focus on the small circle, knowing that it is filtered by, of course, it being in the, it's a seed planted in the pot of your big circle. So it's in that soil. So we get it. So here's the sentence. So I'm going to type it up. So you know how blank-headed people struggle with blank kinds of problems or blank problem? Well, what I do is help them get blank. Okay, so you know how blank kinds of people struggle with blank kinds of problem. Well, what I help them do is get blank results that they're craving. So again, when we say struggling with a problem, this is the problem they know they're struggling with. This is their symptoms. And the result isn't just a generic result, it's something they are craving that they'd be willing to pay for. Yeah. So let's post that up. So that is the sentence. So please don't put it below as a comment, put it as your own post so we can all comment below it and keep track. So we're going to pause for 5 minutes. I want you to pick a little circle and type it out in this format. So actually, before you do that, let me just read a bunch of examples because it may help. Sometimes hearing examples can help make it clear in your head. Where did I put these? Okay. So a number of examples. So you know how a lot of holistic practitioners struggle to get enough clients and feel kind of gross about marketing? Well, what I help them do is figure out authentic marketing strategies that feel right to them. Yeah. Or you know how parents struggle with being too authoritarian or too permissive. What I help them do is figure out parenting strategies that feel authentically right for them, but also who help them stay loving, calm, and centered, even when their kids are testing them the most. a graphic designer might say, I work with independent natural health clinics who are frustrated or bored with their current logo, website, or marketing materials because they know it doesn't really capture who they are anymore. And I help them create materials that really pop and that totally express who they are and grab people's attention. A realtor might say, I work with, you know how a lot of adults with disabilities in Seattle are struggling to find a home that they like and they can afford, but feel overwhelmed, confused with where to even to start to apply for financing. What I help them do is figure out, find homes that totally fit their, you know, disability or situation, and to find the government funding that can sometimes be available to help that happen. You know how a lot of homeowners really want to be more green and energy efficient, but they feel kind of lost and overwhelmed with where to even start with that. Well, what we do is we help direct them to the cheapest, most effective, perfect fit resources through our website, et cetera. A printing company might say, you know how there are a lot of traveling business people, they show up in Calgary hotels and they freak out because they realize they need to do a lot of last minute printing work for the conference or the visit and they have no idea where to go, who to trust. We help them get their materials back in a very quick turnaround so it can be ready for their conference and they can look really good to their bosses, et cetera. So that's a few examples. I hope that gives a sense of what it might be. So let's pause for 5 minutes and invite you to write out your one of your little circles and let's just give it a try. Okay, and when you're done yours, I want you to read other people's, and this is where you're going to give them a 1 through 10 as a rating. And you can also, of course, shower them with encouragement and appreciations and questions and things to help clarify, to refine it, and that. But so a 10 is like, this is so totally clear. I know completely if I'm in that group or I'm not. I can picture people. I can think of somebody who you should talk to. That's a 10. And then a 1 is just like, wow, it's kind of everybody. I don't really get it. So this is, as Martin Luther King Jr. talked about, this is where we practice both unconditional love and uncompromising truth. So this is a safer space where we can give each other that kind of feedback, because otherwise you take it into the marketplace and it just fails and it's more embarrassing. So this is where we can really be supporting each other and giving people very clear, honest feedback of how clear it's landing with us. Because if it isn't, if they get a bunch of twos and threes, that's really useful feedback for them to reflect and help them hone. Because as we move into the niche projects, we do want to be having these small circles that are really clear, and this can be a good way for people to practice that. So let's take another few minutes and put up your things. All right. See what we've got. This is great, everybody. I'm just sort of skimming these, but these all look actually really solid and strong. Nicely done. And by the way, yeah, if you give them anything less than a 6, any way you can be supporting them and getting clear and just showing, like raising up, here's what feels fuzzy, here's what feels vague, is a real help for people. So awesome. Guys are the best. So I know some people are still probably working on theirs, but here's the homework for next week. Is the main homework is just to hone that small circle, to really refine it. And this sentence thing, the fill in the blanks thing, that's the main thing. But I'm going to send you some more resources that may help give some additional edges and little refinements and polishing on it. So next week, I want you to bring one. I think most of you are actually pretty close to it, but I want you to bring next week your most polished, refined possible little circle, because next week we're actually going to go into the niche project idea. And how can we take that little, small circle and have that turn into something that could either help build your reputation or get you clients or whatever it is that you're wanting from the niche project, or just give you a chance to explore that. So, got another 13 minutes. So you can either keep working on that thing that you want to put up, but also I'm open to any questions that you have at this point, anything you want to chat about or you're wondering about in terms of as we move forward, because the next week we take this and we do turn it into a niche project. So are there any sort of wonderings or questions about that? So yeah, the lines are open here. Any questions? One thing I really invite you to notice is how much clearer these small circles are than the big circle. Like when you look at these small circles, or most of them, how much easier it is to think of somebody in particular, to think of hubs, to think of how they might market it, to think of what they might offer them, than it is for the big circles. It's so hard to do it for the big circles. And then people feel like failures, or they feel like they're stupid for not being able to figure out how they market it. And they think, oh, I'm just bad at marketing. And it's not. It's just that the big circle is, the big circle isn't usually as refined as you even got it in this. But even as refined as you got the big circle, it would still be very hard to come up with any kind of marketing strategy around that. I would struggle, and I've been doing this for 10 years. So notice that when we have these little circles, how much clearer things get for you, but also for everybody else. Yeah. Any questions, any wonderings? Right. So Tim asked, at this point, we're not focusing on how we do it yet. What we're talking about, so the trajectory has been, the first week was about the seed, generally, what do I want to do? Who do I want to work with? Last week, we started to refine it a bit with the big circle, putting some demographics, psychographics, kind of journey constraints on it. This week, we're looking at experimenting with a particular small group, a smaller circle, picking one of those. Now, again, you may have three, but let's just pick one of them, one that you'd be excited to do a project with. And that's all we're doing right now. And over the next week, it's just for you to really sit with that and refine it and make sure you've got one that fits all 11 of those criteria. As best as you can, and of course, you know, even the one of like, do I want to be known for this? You might now, and then that might change later, and that's okay. But that's all we're doing over the next week. And you might start thinking about what's a particular project you want to do, but next week you're going to get like a ton of examples of particular case studies and all of that. And I do want to remind people about the bonus calls. So tomorrow at 3 p.m. Pacific time, we're having a call with Lisa Cherney, who's a niching expert, and she's got this program called Ditch Your Niche, which I thought was really cute and sassy. And so we're going to talk about that. You have a chance to ask her questions around niche stuff. She'll share her perspective around niching. Sometimes I just find it's so much easier to hear it from somebody else. I know I've heard the same thing from somebody, and then I hear the exact same thing from somebody else, but the way they say it, the metaphors they use really land for me. So I want you to get a lot of perspectives. And then at 2 p.m., Pacific time on Friday the 27th, so this Friday, there's a call with a fellow David Waugh, who I met in Vancouver, and he's going to be talking about this question of our sort of authentic gifts and how does that connect to and relate to, our niche. And he's really got a lot of thoughts around Joseph Campbell's work and the journey, which of course connects to the whole wounds piece pretty profoundly. Those are the two calls. There's some more that I'm lining up that are going to be coming up that I think you're going to be pretty excited about. So keep your eyes peeled for those. If there are no other questions, then I'm just going to encourage you to just go and read each other's stuff and get cracking on the work. of writing your own, but also reading other people's stuff. And then at some point today or tomorrow, you're going to get the sort of notes from this call with the 11 criteria that can help you dig a little bit deeper in this. So I hope the call was useful for you. I'm really excited about where we're at, and I look forward to connecting with you next week. Take care.